Happy Monday and welcome back to another episode of Breakfast with the Gators. We're part of the Stadium and Gale Network presented by our partner Norris & Norris PA out of Lake City, Florida. Norris & Norris PA is a preeminent law firm serving North Florida since 1985. And you can give Guy a call at 386-752-7240 if you need any assistance with business law matters, real estate, wills, or trust and estate planning. Well, it's a happy Monday, fellas.
Happy Monday, finally, man.
Broken free of the Billy Napier era.
The black flags are hanging at half mast today.
What a happy day it is.
God, I know we were all antsy Saturday. The win, the way we won, we were pretty skeptical if we're actually going to make the decision, right? The loss, certainly, I think that Pete Thamel tweet might have came out a little bit earlier. We had to wait till, I don't know, what, 2:15 Eastern time, somewhere along that timeline. I'm in Dallas right now, so kind of lost track. But, well, I mean, what was your initial reaction? Will, you're the one that's been saying Billy Napier's going to be here. He's going to find a way to get to 7-5, 8-4, whatever it may be, and be the head coach in 2026. And now Billy Gonzalez is our head coach.
It looked like he was going to for a little bit. And I was thinking before the game that I really wanted to win the game, not only because you want the Gators to win and, you know, obviously be successful, but I really wasn't sure that if we had won the game that Scott Strickland was going to pull the trigger. I know there have been others on this podcast also talking about how it would come down on the fifth loss. We only have four of them. And so, you know, not to shift blame, but to shift a little blame. Some others were a bit wrong. I think we also just fired a potential coach of the year candidate, not to bring up any old takes, but it was crazy. I mean, the game was almost like an afterthought. It was really about all the storylines, you know, the Matt Hayes article, the, you know, kind of piling on from other beat writers and beat reporters that it was just like, was this really going to be Billy's last game? And it seemed like right when the game kicked off that it had become pretty clear on like message boards and things like that, that this was the end. And then he kind of coached the most Billy Napier game of all time where like we were clearly the better team. We tried hard to blow it. He kind of wondered what the heck he was doing with his timeouts. And then it came down to a one score game and our, you know, big man, Makai Boro, shout out to him. He made the play to win the game.
Hey, now I said before the season, a potential coach of the year, but I said for the last 2 weeks, since the material changes had happened during the season, that he was going to get fired after Mississippi State. Makai Boro ruined the exact circumstances being correct. We did end up winning, but I've said for a couple weeks now that I thought it would be after Mississippi State, in fairness to me.
We're volume shooters on here. One of us is bound to get at least part of what happens correct just with how much we talk.
And when we do, we're going to clip it and we're going to put it out for the masses to see.
Right. I don't even remember what my preseason prediction was. It doesn't even matter anymore. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're better off now than we were then, even if we had
brand new season. It's a 5-game.
Exactly.
We're on to Georgia now. We are. So all preseason talk is out the window. And that, Will, you brought up Makai, the interception in the game. And I know Jackson, one of our callers from Charleston, talked about how fitting of an end is it for the big man to intercept it. Billy Napier starts his tenure in Gainesville, Florida with a game-stealing interception in the end zone. Amari Burney to upset a top 10 Utah. Billy Napier tries to give the game away Saturday night in the swamp until the big man from Atlanta steps back in coverage, picks it off. Mississippi State was in field goal territory. Hunter, what in the hell is going through your mind, man? I mean, all of us were texting during the game. We're up 9 points with 5 minutes left. They go right down the field in about four plays and make it a one score game again. And we're right back into the Billy Napier special late.
I was doing a Heath Ledger impression in my seat, just laughing like the Joker. I mean, don't get me wrong. I've said it a million times. I will always root for Florida to win, and I was rooting for a win. But we said at the tailgate going in, the best case scenario is an ugly, ugly Billy Napier win where Florida still comes out on top. but it's so obvious and evident that he's got to go. And that's exactly what happened. And, you know, if we would have won by 20, 30, who knows what would have happened on Sunday. You can only speculate at this point, but it was the most Billy Napier game of all time. It was the perfect game to end his tenure. And when we got up comfortable, it was at 23-14, it was like, oh, this game should be over, right? You saw some people leave the stadium. What was that, like a 50-yard pass, like two plays in the next drive? Yeah.
Down inside the 10-yard.
I think they converted a 4th and 19, too.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Every moment of success for 45 games was fleeting and just – it was such a perfect Billy Napier game. You knew what was happening. You knew what was going to come. It was like a slow train wreck. It's kind of like everything the last 4 years, including his firing today. It was just like a slow, deliberate, just look at your watch. You know what's coming. And finally, it's come to an end.
Yeah. And, you know, at that point, when they're, you know, at the 40-yard line, 50-yard line, I'm just pacing back and forth. Our section is almost – I rode empty out at that point. And at that point, I was just like, just end it, Mississippi State. Just please, God, just do it in this fashion and just put us out of our misery officially. Because if the Micaiah interception – we thought might have delayed the inevitable for another game or whatnot. That fifth loss talk has been circulated the last few weeks. Thankfully not. And there was a pretty hostile crowd Saturday night in Ben Hill Griffin Stadium, something we really haven't seen since, I think, the Missouri homecoming game with Will Muschamp. So we're going to jump to John from Tampa and get his perspective on the environment inside the Swamp.
Hey guys, it's John from Tampa here. First time, actually I've called before, but long time listener. I had a question. I want to know where you guys stand on the fire Napier chants. Frankly, I thought it was like a little disrespectful at first. And then the three timeout situation happened and I was like, you know what? This guy deserves everything he gets and he deserved everything he got. So I would love to know your guys' thoughts. Let me know.
Yeah, thanks, John. Appreciate it. I'll admit it. We started those chants in Section 63, and I think at one point late in the fourth quarter, I think Nick Della Torre even tweeted that he could see us from the press box getting the Fire Billy Napier chants that echoed throughout the stadium. Even when we were leading, you know, our defense is on the field trying to prevent a game-winning drive, and the entire crowd's focus was getting that man off the field officially, you know. It's tenure of Gator is over. So, Dev, I know you guys have some words over there by the tunnel.
Oh, yeah. So, the Fire Billy Napier chants, I guess some of them started in the first half. I tried to relent. I tried not to engage in such such fandom, such toxic fandom, as the once great Tim Brando would say. But I – when I saw 20 yards worth of penalties on a field goal to make a, whenever you get the chance to make a 33-yard field goal, a 53-yard field goal, you just got to do it. That was where the Fire Billy chant started for me. He smiled as he was getting booed off the field at halftime. And, by the end of the game, yeah, the y'all did a good job starting the chants, because that was as loud of a fire anybody chant as I've ever heard in the Swamp. I was standing about 50 feet away from where Scott Strickland was during the fourth quarter. And there's no doubt that, that the administration people that were on the field in the fourth quarter were hearing the boos and hearing the chants coming from the south end zone and the entire Swamp after, as the game kind of came to an end. And then leaving the stadium too, you have people walking out after a crazy win like that. Still Fire Napier chants. He had totally lost the fan base there by the end. So it
Dev, I even texted you. I was headed towards the tunnel. I thought I was going to meet you. I guess I beelined right past you as you were exiting the gates. And
me and Jake Lovelace, we saw you walking the opposite direction as we were flowing out of the stadium. And you were a man on a mission. So I knew exactly where you were heading. I was ready to get out of there, trying to beat the traffic back to back towards Jacksonville, and you were your business was not over when the game ended.
Yeah, and he Napier made a point to run in the tunnel, sprinted actually the last 25 yards of running with Micah, who is, you know, enjoying all the fandom as he certainly deserves. I was very happy for the players. But he made sure to bolt in with number 93 to avoid a lot of the boos that were coming in from that portion of the stadium. Sam, were you able to hear any of the chants? I know you had to miss a little bit of the second half. Did you tune in for the last 2 minutes or so? And how loud was it on the broadcast?
I heard the chants before the last 2 minutes, and I think I texted you guys, like, what are they chanting? Because that's what I thought it was, and I was right. Good for you guys. Terrible way. I mean, it was exactly what we expected. A Billy Napier-type win, exactly what we needed, and got the good news today. Took a little longer than we expected. Bunch of conflicting reports all week long.
We had beat reporters in the bushes outside the facility letting us know who was walking in, who was pulling up in their cars and everything. It was a wild day on Twitter.
Tradition like no other. Florida football. But, yeah, it's another coaching search. And by the way, Strickland sounded in his presser, he sounds like he knows it's go time. So encouraging. Yeah,
like Will said, it could be a revenge tour for Scott, and that kind of presents us into our next voicemail. We got some job openings right now, some big ones. Penn State, the most notable right now. Arkansas, a few others, we believe. I think Florida State is potentially going to be open by the time this podcast drops Monday. Who knows with LSU? But let's get Jake from New Orleans on the line.
Hey, guys. Jake calling in from New Orleans. Would love to hear y'all break down the program. From an attractiveness standpoint, I really think including Alabama in 2023 after Nick Saban, that this potentially open Florida job, active job in the modern era of college football, just with what seems like it's been built, especially from a fan base and a donor base that is starved for some football success. So I'd love to hear y'all just break down the whole state of the program outside of Napier. Thanks and go Gators.
Appreciate the call, Jake. Yeah, I'll give it to the two guys that have worked inside the program, kind of when the NIL era started, where we were at that time when you guys were still students, what we've seen the last, 4 years now of the NIL era, somewhere along that timeline. Will, the attractiveness of the Gator job, you know, we're arguably the number one job on the market this time. What are you saying to the,
yeah,
to the
folks across the country? And we're the number one job open on the market at this time, and I don't see another one that could even rival us. You know, maybe if something happens with Brian Kelly, they've got a tough schedule, obviously, and so if they really are unhappy and they fire him, then like debatably, you could probably put Florida and LSU like in the same tier, like 1A, 1B. But you know, FSU coming open doesn't scare me. Other jobs around the country, Arkansas, Penn State, those don't really matter. I think that the program as a whole is in a really good spot. I know, you know, if you read Twitter, you'll see a lot of doom and gloom about how Napier, which is a fact that he was the worst coach since World War II. And it's kind of, that's really the reason he got fired, is because everything else around him outside of the game days was actually really good, I think. And so I think you're going to be able to get a guy in here who, if it's the right coach, should be able to retain most of this roster, especially the key star players, and should be competing for the SEC in the playoffs and potentially even win a national championship if you bring the right guy in. So I don't buy into, you know, the program is finished. It's a totally dead thing. I think that, you know, the next guy will be taking over a much better team and program than Napier took over from Mullen. And Mullen probably took over a little bit, you know, some better players, especially on the defensive side. And he kind of lucked into like Trask being a stud on the bench and Kyle Pitts and that sort of thing when he took over for McElwain. But I think that the program is primed for success. And that's why I really don't buy this, you know, doom and gloom, or that the administration is, you know, not buying in, or that people are making excuses for them not doing the right thing. I think that Scott Strickland, for all his faults, has really shown that he's willing to invest heavily in the revenue sports. He did it for basketball. not only with, you know, finding and hiring Todd Golden, but then giving Todd the things that Todd was asking for to help as far as transfer portal recruiting goes and, you know, development and just things like that. And then he did all of that for Napier as well. And so I think the program's in a much better spot than when Napier took it over. And I don't think that, you know, next year should be looked at as like a typical year one transition year kind of thing. It should be able to, you know, tweak up a couple things on this plane and let's take off.
Yeah. Well, with that nail on the head, I mean, he covered it all perfectly there. This is not a rebuild. A coach coming in is not coming in to rebuild a team. He's coming into a great situation, a fan base that is hungry to win, that is selling out games for a 2-4 coach. And they're going to be in a great spot. They're going to be a great spot. And like Will said, for all of Scott Strickland's faults, while Billy Napier didn't work out, he backed it up when it came to, like Will said, Billy coming in with his checklist of things he wanted. He checked them all off, right? He gave them the larger pool of salary for assistant coaches. The NIL infrastructure got a lot better, partly probably because Will and I left. The program's in an awesome spot. Will hit the nail on the head. It's in a great spot, and whoever's going to come in is going to be able to take off running with it.
Yeah, and I also, really quick, I was really encouraged by what Strickland put in his email where, you know, it was no more of the championships with integrity. It was like, he mentioned we don't even want to compete for championships. We want to win them. And I just think that the mood of the Athletic Association seems to have changed since Todd Golden got hired and won the national championship.
And to that point, I actually had that pulled up because that was the exact point that I was going to make. I'll read that section of Scott's statement from today. In his statement, he said, "The standards and expectations for Gators football are to win championships, not simply to compete. We exist to win and will not settle for less. UF has never been more invested in the success of this football program, elite facilities, robust NIL opportunities, and comprehensive support for our student athletes and staff than we are today. The University of Florida is a destination, a place where people come to achieve excellence. With our resources, passionate fan base, and unwavering commitment, we are determined to return the Gators football program to championship form. I understand and accept the responsibility to deliver a football program that reflects the greatness of this university. And I thank Gator Nation for their continued support as we begin this next chapter." That's fantastic. That's not a message before. That's not the the championship experience with integrity line that we've kind of heard for a decade, which is fine. But we're not looking for a championship experience. We're looking for championships at this point at the University of Florida.
As we can see by your background, right?
Absolutely. And to that point as well, I was in the south end zone and the basketball team came out of that tunnel to get introduced during the game. And when I tell you that the entire south end zone stood up, was taking pictures, the recruits were trying to take pictures with the basketball team, the people were going crazy for the basketball program while the game was going on. The Jaden Boss 60-yard touchdown run that happened that got called back for the hold, nobody in the south end zone was even paying attention to the game. They were all focused on the basketball team that was about to get introduced to the next TV timeout. It's the most like a basketball school it's ever felt at Florida. But 90,000 people standing ovation for the national champion college basketball team shows the hunger that this fan base has, that, you know, they've tasted that success with basketball again. I think that it's going to get parlayed into a hunger in this coaching search, big game hunting in this coaching search. I think that this athletic department needed that Todd Golden run to realize what we are again. You know, one of the things that I've kind of I've said amongst you guys is it took Georgia 40 years in the wilderness to realize, you know what, we're Georgia. It's time to stop messing around and start investing in the football program and taking matters back into our own hands before they, you know, went on their run with Kirby Smart. It was 36 years before they fired, from 1980 when they won their last national championship until 2016 when they hired Kirby. It's been 17 years for us, and I think that now's one of those pivotal points in the history of Gator football where the boosters, the administration, that alignment has to come together so that we're not looking up and it's, you know, 35 years before we decide to get serious about football again. And I think the basketball program doing what they did in April is the first step to the athletic department and the administration aligning itself to make this next hire and to push Florida back to where they belong on the football field too.
And we've seen the extra support the boosters will give to a winning program. I think it was the day after the national championship game, another $1 million donation rolled in. I believe several of the boosters or one booster ponied up all the money for the basketball court recently that the national championship game was played on to auction off for the Florida Victorious to auction off to the fans to help raise money for NIL. So they're committed with a winning program. This podcast has officially endorsed Lane Kiffin. As you can see, we all know that's who we're going after. That's a bunch of media writers talking about it Saturday after Lane, I think, scored on his first five possessions in Athens, touchdowns. They did lose, which that, I think that helps Florida case. Obviously, even Brett McMurphy tweeted, that's a big win in Athens, especially for Gator fans. So let's jump into our next segue. Obviously, that's who we want. That's who we've endorsed. He fits the mold of Florida football. He will troll the rivals. He likes to score points, and he'll have a sellout crowd. But let's listen to Asian Jared from Alabama and see what he has to say.
Boys, this is Asian Jared from Twitter calling in from Birmingham, Alabama. I am thrilled on this Sunday afternoon, a beautiful Sunday that is. We have exited the gates of hell and are now back in the land of the living. So my question is, if Lane is the guy that we're going after, and Lane is the guy who hypothetically get, who do you want to see on his coaching staff? And also, do you think our money players like DB3 in Dallas and even DJ to some extent stay if Lane is the guy? Thank you, boys, for all you do. Go Gators.
Thank you, Ace and Jared. And my bad, fellas, we were not getting to the coach if we weren't getting Lane Kiffin. But let's just go ahead and talk about his staff. It was rumored by Matt Hayes. Napier tried to hire him in 24. Charlie Wise Jr. Yeah, not accurate. So, obviously, that is a guy we would like to see. Ole Miss scores a lot of points. They're top five, top 10 nationally each year. Anybody else, Dev, Hunter, Will, that you've looked at their staff and have seen, you know, maybe this guy, Pete Golding, a lot of points have been allowed there in Oxford or the last several years. I'll start with you, Dev, and who do you think you want to bring over on that staff?
Yeah, I mean, I think that Lane's earned the right to bring in the staff that he wants to bring in. I think that he has a lot more credibility in the SEC with the staff that he's built and you know, his won double-digit games with. So if he wants to bring Pete Golding, if he wants to bring Charlie Weiss Jr., I'm perfectly happy with that. I also think that there's a couple of elite position coaches out there that are former SEC head coaches that – if Lane Kiffin was starting a new staff here that he would be making phone calls to. I think Ed Orgeron's on that list that's exhibited some experience interest in getting back into coaching. I think that Sam Pittman as an offensive line coach would be an elite hire. So I think that a guy like Lane Kiffin gives you those sort of options and flexibility and credibility to where you're not, you know, kind of settling for Louisiana Lafayette type assistant coaches. And then I also think that Nick Savage as a receiver coach is a guy that Florida fans are obviously all going to be familiar with. Those first couple Mullen teams were really, really good physical football teams that, you know, I don't recall, it's been 6 years now, but I don't recall injury issues like what we've seen the last 4 years, those first couple of years under Savage. So I know that he had a high approval rating his first tenure here, and he would be a guy that I'd be excited for Lane to bring along with him. So I think that that Lane brings a lot of good options in terms of an assistance that he would hire.
Yeah, Hunter, will anybody stick out from that staff? You know, you mentioned Sam Pittman, Dev. I kind of like John Garrison. I believe this is his third year in Oxford, and they've done a really good job establishing that offensive line, protecting whether it's Austin Simmons, Jackson Dart, or Trinidad. They also got an explosive run game. So I believe that offensive line's done a real good job producing the top 10 offenses each year. I believe a few years of the top 10 rushing offense. Hunter, anybody stick out on that staff? Have you had a chance to look?
Yeah, I mean, Charlie Weiss Jr. is obviously the first one that comes to mind. Love for him to come with. I know that Charlie calls the plays, correct? Lane doesn't call the plays very often. So
Lane has, I believe, third downs he can veto. And then the fourth down and any trickeries, I believe it's all Lane. So, gotcha. But yeah, Charlie Weiss handles most of the play calling duties.
Wait a minute. You're allowed to, like, have a little bit of feel in game for these types of things? It doesn't have to be predetermined every time?
Billy can't hurt you anymore, Devin.
You're right. Go ahead, Hunter.
It's not your fault. No, Charlie Weiss Jr. is one that sticks out. Joe Judge is actually a name. I didn't know he was on that staff. I haven't pulled up, but hadn't seen that name in a minute. He'd be a fun one to bring over. Obviously, Kiffin, his son, or is that his son or his nephew? Who's that? Chris Kiffin, linebackers coach?
Honestly, I don't even know. He's a younger brother.
Younger brother. Okay. Yep. Golding, I mean, you kind of mentioned it, Jackson, when you brought the topic up. I haven't thought about Ole Miss defense much when I think about Ole Miss last couple of years. So, well, I haven't paid a particular close eye as to what scheme he runs or anything along those lines. You know, wouldn't mind a new DC hire when he comes in. But I'll tell you what, I think a lot of Ole Miss fans on Twitter who are obviously very scared of us right now. I know, Devin, you've had some fun interactions with them. I think they probably, you know, they'd probably lose their mind hearing us just talk about which assistant coach we're going to pick right off from their staff right now. I mean, we jumped right into Lane Kiffin like it's a done deal before we even started talking coaches as a whole. I mean, they're going to love this segment.
They are going to be ruthless in the comments. So we need to clip one of these, obviously, and tag the ringleader online and see what kind of feedback we get. Will, is there anybody on your staff, on their staff that you'd see, or if they've already been mentioned, is there anybody you'd like for not just Kiffin, but if there's another coach that comes to Gainesville, maybe retain on our staff? And I think Will is frozen. So I want to remove him.
The retention question. Outside of Billy G, maybe if Lane wants Ron Roberts, I'd trust him. I want everybody on the staff gone. there's not very many options on this staff, I don't think, that are worthy of wearing the logo for another year under a separate coaching staff.
I don't disagree with you, Dev. Maybe
except for the video coordinator crew. Video coordinator Ru Joaquin and assistant Shane Morgan. They stay forever. So I just wanted to put that out there. Those are my people.
Those video guys, are they dropping another Journey video this week? I know the timeline is fiending for some more content right now.
Or coaches film only. I can't speak to that.
All right, now let's jump into, if it's not Lane Kiffin, who are we going to go after? So let's call in Chapin from Fort Lauderdale.
Good morning, guys. It's Chapin from Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Got to ask the question. If we can't get Lane, who's our other choices? Happy birthday to Max. Have a great day.
All right. Thanks, Chapin, for calling in. Happy birthday, Max. Will, I'll kick it off to you. You know, who's kind of 2-3 on your list right now?
Well, I think Marcus Freeman is definitely up there. I think whenever I'm looking at it, you know, there are all the hot names. The one that seems to come up the most after Lane is definitely Freeman, but there's a lot of talk about Eli Drinkwitz. I don't really like that. I guess because he is technically an offensive guy, he gets like the Fitz Florida moniker from some of the big media guys, but I really am not all that impressed with him. He's, you know, he played Alabama close last week and he just had a decent win over Auburn. You know, I think if Alex McPherson he's playing hurt right now, and I think if he hadn't been hurt, then Missouri probably loses that game three times the other night. But so I'm not all that impressed with him. If you go look and dive deeper into his success rate statistics and the competition that Missouri has played, I think Billy Napier even might have gone like 9-3 at worst against some of those schedules. A name that I like is Jed Fish. I'm very impressed with the way he rebuilt Arizona and what he's doing with Washington after they had such a flood of portal players leave after DeBoer left for Alabama. But to me, it's you gotta go for Lane, and if you don't get Lane, then you gotta totally regroup.
Yeah. That's the difficult thing with Lane, right? Auburn tried getting him. He turned them down. If he makes a playoff, it's going to be kind of hard to get his commitment. And we'll talk about the recruiting and transfer portal season later on in the show. But we got to be careful as well. If he finishes 11-1 or 10-2, makes a playoff, how committed is he going to be to join the Gators in early January, get a late start on the recruiting portion with early signing day happening mid-December and the portal window opening, I think, January 2nd. So, Hunter, who are you buying for? With, you know, certainly Cignetti's been on our list. Indiana kind of goes behind the scenes. Nothing's leaked, and they signed him to an 8-year extension.
Yeah, that's actually, Jackson, that's how you're supposed to do it when you're going to extend a coach. You just extend them. You don't release a quote as to your hope to extend them. So, thought that was interesting from the Ole Miss AD. But outside of Cignetti now presumably being off the table, Freeman for me would be the next one for sure. Those three, Kiffin, Cignetti, Freeman, were the three I named back when we did the initial discussion of coaches. And I think those were the three consensus on the show. So Freeman would be the next one for me. Beyond that, I'll tell you what, I watched back our episode from last week. I watched him speak on game day a little bit. He's not my first choice. He's not my second. He may not even be my third, but you at least call James Franklin and have a conversation of what it would look like. He sure sounded motivated to jump right back into it. I'll tell you what. I know he's got the old clause in the contract where you have to give it the old college try to get a new job, but usually how that goes is they take a TV gig for a year or two and then get back into coaching. He sounded hungry to get right back into it. I would at least have a conversation with him. Again, not my top choice, but
there's a certain caller that we're about to play after Dev gives his rundown on James Franklin again. And what he witnessed at our tailgate watching College Game Day with Franklin on the set. Dev?
Yeah, I think I talked the rest of the tailgate into Franklin except for old Burkle. So I think he's the clear number three at this point. I don't think that there's anybody else that's particularly close if you're getting past Freeman and Kiffin. I think that if you're looking for a guy that's instantly credible, he's going to hire a good staff, he's going to recruit well. I think that you're looking at a guy that can have consistent long-term success at Florida. And my thing is you can argue that every coach cannot win a big game until they win a big game. And when you consistently put yourself in position to win big games, eventually you're going to win one. And it wasn't, you know, a matter of them being completely outmatched and outclassed and didn't belong on the same field as the teams he played. They lost close games to good teams. And the other thing that bothers me with the Franklin narrative is you can't argue that he doesn't win big games when he won two playoff games last year. I know that they were against SMU and Boise State, but those are playoff teams. And if Florida was in the playoffs, those would be the teams that we would have to play on, you know, whatever year. You know, you can only play the team that's in front of you. It's not a demerit against James Franklin that he won two playoff games and they just happened to be against SMU and Boise State last year. So those were those are my top three. You know, I've done just like everybody else, extensive research into the resumes and the backgrounds of all the coaches that have popped up. Another guy that has come across my desk that I like is Cliff Kingsbury. I think that his early career is kind of reminiscent of what Lane looked like, kind of pre-Alabama rehabilitation. Gets a job as an NFL coach, very, very young, has some moderate success at the college level, very, very young. He spent a couple of years as a coordinator in the NFL. He led Jaden Daniels as a rookie last year to an NFC championship game. I don't think that you last as long as he did as an NFL head coach. I think he was 35-40 or something like that as an NFL head coach. I don't think you do that if you can't coach at all. He's the guy that play that runs that high flying offensive style that Florida fans kind of clamor for. Now, would he want to come back to the collegiate level? I'm not sure. But I do think that he's a guy that if he is interested in going back to college, could be a good fit for the University of Florida. So I think my Mount Rushmore of candidates at this point would be Kiffin and Freeman 1 and 2. Franklin third, and then I think as of October the 19th at 10:18 p.m., my number four would be Cliff Kingsbury.
Yeah, if you like Kingsbury, I think we got to mention Lincoln Riley into that conversation as well. Multiple coaches, multiple Heisman winners, multiple NFL starters. But yeah, I like
Didn't Lincoln Riley have the opportunity to come coach the Gators before Billy Napier, and he elected not to?
I don't know if he had the opportunity, but I do believe he left left Oklahoma knowing they were going to come into the SEC, and he thought it would be a lot easier to go out west. So I'm not too sure about his competitive nature, Will.
I think that Devin and Hunter make good points on James Franklin, but the issue I have with him is that every game in the SEC is a big game. Like, if Billy Napier had been coaching Penn State with a better roster than 90% of the Big Ten teams, he probably does exactly what he did at Louisiana, which was just like beat up on all the teams that weren't nearly as talented and then lose to the more talented teams. And so I don't think that, you know, obviously if you're going from Billy Napier to James Franklin, you are upgrading, but is that really going for championships? Now, you may have to consider that if Lane Kiffin and Marcus Freeman say no, but I don't think that James Franklin is somebody that like fits Florida. It's basically like hiring, you know, kind of a Will Muschamp type. I know he's not really like a defensive guy. He still, I guess, is more offensive minded. But if you think about his entire decade plus at Penn State, it's like he would have a number one, you know, top 10 draft pick coming out on the edge every year. But his quarterback play was atrocious, and Florida fans would get sick of that within the first three games. You know, the first he's going to lose to Georgia because it's a big game, and then they'd be very sick of him. So I think James Franklin is a good coach. I don't want him to go to Florida State. Definitely not. But I don't think that he particularly fits the University of Florida.
But he won. You got to, if you say that, you also have to acknowledge he won two Big Ten championships. He was in a Final Four last year.
He did.
And he's going to have at Penn State, your athlete is capped. The quality of the skill players that you're going to get there is capped. You know, his best offensive weapons, he had Saquon Barkley a decade ago, but his best weapon there was Tyler Warren, a tight end. Imagine being able to walk into a roster that has a Dallas Wilson, a Vernell Brown, a Jaden Baugh, a DJ Lagway. I think that's already a better, more talented offensive skill position roster than anything he would have had in 12 years at Penn State. And maybe. I think that you have the opportunity to have to build more rosters like that at Florida than what he would have had while he was at Penn State.
Maybe so. I don't know.
Justin Shorter, man. Come on.
Yeah. I don't think he ever produced the wide receiver or the offensive skill guys that Florida fans would crave, you know, outside of
but you can attract them to Florida easier than you could Penn State, right?
I mean, why can people
theoretically? I mean, they can go to Ohio State. You know, exactly. There's not a whole lot of difference between Ohio State and Penn State, except
there's a lot of difference between Penn State and Ohio State.
I don't think so. I mean, they both have great, incredible resources and fan bases. You know, Ohio State had a better coach and said they were recruiting better, but I would say that, you know, they're both kind of that's like talking like who's the better team, better program between Florida and LSU. Like, they're both pretty similar, maybe give or take who the coach is at a certain time there. But, you know, and if you asked anybody in the 90s, nobody would have told you that LSU is a better program than Florida. So we don't have to, you know, spend all day talking about James Franklin when we've already hired Lane Kiffin. I'm just saying I don't think that he fits at Florida and that Florida fans would get very sick of him quickly.
Yeah, good point, Will. I agree with you on that. There's not a whole lot of difference between Penn State and Ohio State and why he couldn't get those athletes to Happy Valley. And that brings us to Caleb from Northwest Florida. I don't know where Northwest Florida is. Is that the panhandle? I don't know why he couldn't have just said that in his introduction, but we'll get Caleb on the line.
Hey, guys. It's Caleb from Northwest Florida. So Billy's fired. I just want to ask, where does that leave our program? How does that affect us recruiting wise? And where we stand now with our schedule, with the rest of our schedule, how do you think that will play out? Thank you guys, and I hope you guys have a great day.
Thanks, Caleb, for calling in. Well, the rest of the schedule, we're going to go undefeated and finish 8-4, and buy ourselves into a pretty darn good bowl game. So I think we can all agree on that. But in terms of recruiting, I don't think we've had any decommits yet. No, as of
who
Sunday
cares?
Night. Yeah, it doesn't matter. But, you know, some of these kids have come out and said they're committed to the logo, not the coach, which we always like to hear, right? You want guys that want to come here and be Florida Gators. A few of these guys will obviously kind of stick around, see who our next head coach will be, make sure they fit in the system. We do lose that first signing period, which is going to be tough. Hunter, what are your thoughts? Where does this go with recruiting? The timeline is different. I wish they'd get rid of this early signing period and move it back to February like it used to be. But what are your thoughts on keeping this class together?
Yeah, I think the outlook on it changes a lot with the transfer portal era. And honestly, where it is now and when it started. I think when the transfer portal started, a lot of people, the mindset was recruit foundationally through high school and then use the transfer portal to supplement. I still think to an extent that's true, but I think you've seen the last few years the transfer portal continuing to rise as far as importance and the emphasis, and it's not as much just let's supplement it with the portal. You can build a pretty darn good team through the portal. I mean, the guy above your left shoulder there, Jackson, is a good example of that. And if that is the coach, then this kind of changes the whole question of how the recruiting class looks to begin with, because you know he's just going to hammer the portal and probably bring over a lot of guys too. So, that's kind of how I view it now.
Yeah. One other thing about, you know, the recruiting is that Billy already got to play such a great recruiting class coming in card. He got to do that last year. And so, you know, I mean, the guy he's got a Gatorade Player of the Year winner at quarterback, and he had four of the five, you know, returning offensive linemen, and he's got five-star wide receivers, and the offense is as putrid as it had like ever been. So he could have, you know, the number one class by far and away, and there would be no sense in keeping him. Time to move on.
Well, and all that, and I think that, you know, the right coach getting hired will fix any sort of ailments with this recruiting class. You know, we kind of hear Will Miles talks really well about this. The first transition class doesn't matter nearly as much as that second class does. And I think that if you hire the right coach, that coach is going to figure out the roster. I think you watch what goes on with some of our potential candidates around the country. Lane Kiffin's able to overcome any sort of unbalance in his roster in an offseason. He's able to plug in holes with high school and transfer recruiting. He's able to overcome an injury at quarterback to have a backup from Ferris State hang 35 points on Georgia in Athens. I think that if you hire the right coach, the rest becomes a whole lot easier than what this last staff has made it look these last 4 years. And then as far as like the rest of this year goes, I think that it's a really interesting, an interesting five games coming up. You have three rivalry games with a coach that's been here for, how long has Billy G been here? For 20 years, you know, off and on. I think that he understands what these rivalry games mean. They're always big games when you go play Georgia, when you go play Tennessee, when you go play Florida State. That's 3/5 of the schedule. And then your other game is on the road against the team whose coach you're trying to take. So 4 out of our last 5 games are all big games and interesting games that we have a roster that's talented enough to go beat any of those teams. So I'm personally re-energized and excited to watch the Billy G-led Florida Gators, to have a head coach that's wearing the school colors again, and to close out this season, hopefully strong. I mean, I think the good thing about beating Mississippi State last night, or earlier this week on Saturday night, is that you put yourself in a position to have the opportunity to make a bowl game, and which that's very sad. That's not the standard at Florida. That's not the standard that we had coming into this season. But I think that positioning yourself at 3-4, you do have the opportunity in some big games to re-energize the fan base and to build into hopefully making a splash higher come early December.
Yeah, and you mentioned the portal, Dev. I think the strategy coming in for any new coach that comes to Gainesville is retention. We got a lot of really good young players, and you know, then they can go fill with some of their former players on their team, kind of plug and play there, especially on the offensive line. I believe we're going to lose all 5 starters or 4 of the 5 starters, so that will need some quick revamp work. But you're led by, like you said, Vernell Brown, Jaden Ball, DJ Lagway, Dallas Wilson on the offensive side, and then you got Miles Graham and a bunch of other young guys on the defensive line. That linebacker group is young, and I was glad to see Lagonza Hayward get some burn Saturday, and he showed some potential. I thought he played real clean. This first transition class can be a lot better than what people think, just due to the retainage aspect. If we're going to make that splash higher, whether it's Marcus Freeman or Lane Kiffin, they're coming from really good schools with a lot of really good players that would hopefully like to join them down in Gainesville.
Yeah, if it's Lane Kiffin, you have to imagine that 20, 25 players off his roster, off the top of the top end of his roster, are guys that he would want to keep, that he would, you know, at least recruit to follow him to Florida. Now, if they were to hire, you know, Pete Golding to be their head coach and Billy Napier to be their offensive coordinator, like some of their message board guys have suggested would be their floor bare minimum hires. Maybe they retain some of those top end players that they want to retain. But I think if we're operating as if Lane Kiffin is the next coach of the Florida Gators, I think that you're going to look at a roster next year that is very talented, because I think that, you know, we have good players that have reasons to stay at Florida. And I think that he brings in his best 20, 25 players off of his roster at Ole Miss that can hit the ground running and be competitive in year one at Florida.
Well, I think that's also why it's so crucial that, you know, Scott seems that he's going to go for kind of the big name and not sort of an up and comer. Because like Hunter and I were talking about earlier, we are not in a situation where this thing needs to be rebuilt. Like, it is ready to win now. But if you do have to go further down the list, and it doesn't really matter if you're going like a Jed Fish or Rhett Lashley or like anybody who's kind of an up and comer, whether Golish or John Summerall, the other names that kind of get thrown out from time to time, you're going to have big, and it may not even be that they like don't want to play for the head coach, but if Marcel Reed decides to transfer or something and Mike Elko has just, you know, finished in the semifinals and calls DJ Lagway to like, where do you think he's going to go? If it's not Lane Kiffin or, you know, a big name like that coming into Gainesville. And so I think I think that is going to drive a lot of what Scott is looking at when he's making a hire. It seems like we're kind of back in 2004 where we really just need somebody to come in here and point this thing in the right direction and see how far we can go.
Well, Will, as we've heard over the last week or so, this is not a quick fix. So you're asking for a lot.
That's why the flags are at half mast. The flags are at half mast now.
If you could protect 5 players on the current roster, who would be the 5 guys that we have now that you would want to protect from the portal going into the new era?
I think the 4 obvious ones are Miles Graham, Vernell Brown, Dallas Wilson, and Jaden Ball. I think you start there. That 5th one, I'm not really too sure about. It's Lagway, obviously, right? You'd like to protect him. But he is from Texas, and you know, those are two good big programs out there. If he gets a phone call and, you know, maybe he doesn't like the head coaching hire we get in Gainesville, but those are my top four right now.
And if we were to operate, like if our top two candidates, if we hire one of those two guys, if it's Freeman or if it's Lane,
yeah, I think then Lagway cracks that list.
I think Lagway becomes that much more important if it's a Freeman. If it's Lane, I think that you're kind of looking at a guy that has proven that he can win with whatever quarterback he chooses. So it'd be really nice to see DJ get coached by a top three, top five offensive mind and quarterback coach in the country. But I think that you know, the same names that you have, and then I would add Jaden Woods as a guy, as a true freshman that splashed, that I would like to see complete his career as a Gator and not just go through 1 year and wind up transferring.
Hey, if we got James Franklin, you know, Jaden Woods probably isn't going anywhere considering he flipped from Penn State.
Added to the pros on his list.
Hunter, any other names that jump off to you from the roster that we didn't mention?
Nothing to add there. Those are the six names that I think come to mind, and I agree with Jackson as far as who that fifth one is. To me, it's either Jaden Woods or DJ, and really DJ, it's more just like what Devin said. If it's Lane coming over, it's not that I wouldn't want DJ as the quarterback. It's that if I'm choosing to have to protect five to stay, I'm not really worried about who the quarterback is, because if Lane Kiffin can put up, you know, as many points as he does with a backup from a fair state, as Devin likes to say, then it doesn't matter who the quarterback is. Again, I'd love to see DJ Lagway and Lane Kiffin's offense. I still have a lot of hope for DJ, and I think it's truly a situation where the coach failed him. I think the talent's there, and so I'd love to watch him play. But Jaden Woods, definitely another one, like you said, be really fun to stick around. He's going to have a fun career here.
It's speaking of DJ and the coaching, it'll be really interesting to see over these next few weeks with Russ. Now, you know, it's on the record that Russ Callaway will be calling plays. DJ in high school was running an air raid type spread offense system. That's sort of Russ Callaway's background. And so it's going to be interesting to see how the offense changes. I'm glad they made the change in the bye week, because it's going to, one, give the players emotionally time to get over you know, the loss of, like, by all accounts, somebody they absolutely loved and died for and, like, wanted to, you know, send off the right way, play hard until the very end for Billy. And so to see them kind of regroup and then see how the offense, you know, looks against pretty tough competition should be fun to watch. But I feel like we're going to get the answer as to whether or not DJ is really, you know, going to be here in the next couple weeks.
Yeah, do we think that Bruce Callaway has any zone beaters in his playbook?
I've got to imagine he may have at least one. As long as his playbook is more than like six plays like Billy's was, then
we're off to a good start.
Yeah.
It's going to be a fun 2 weeks, guys. I'm excited for Florida-Georgia build up. And
yeah, we were texting each other like, it's if you stay here for Florida-Georgia, you know, you obviously you want the Gators to win, but you just don't want to prolong the inevitable any further. So a loss to Georgia would have got him canned, but thankfully that came before the bye week.
I've already got Georgia fans texting me. They hope that we do not get Lane Kiffin. They are terrified of that. I don't blame them.
I don't blame them either. If our rivals hate who we're going to get as head coach, that's a damn good hire in my book. So I think the administration and boosters understand that gotta go make this splash higher, and they'll do whatever it takes. I thought it was fitting in Billy Napier's finale. We've harped on it multiple times on this podcast. I believe we even mentioned after LIU, possibly USF. The game day experience is atrocious in Ben Hill Griffin Stadium for the most part. Nothing on the fans. We actually saw a smooth transition into the only Gators get out alive. They actually played all like 15 seconds of it. That was a good start. We shot off in the new smoke gun, the colors of the Gators and not the opponent. I was a little nervous maroon and white was going to get fired off as we entered the field, but we avoided that mistake. We played Thunderstruck before kickoff, and we did the Gator chant before every kickoff throughout the game, which we have not done I don't think we've done it during the Billy Napier tenure. Did anybody else notice that throughout the
Saturday? The only thing that was missing was we still haven't gotten Party Like a Rockstar after the big win, which was a staple, I think, going back to, you know, Urban's first year. But it all, outside of the play on the field, it's going to be really funny just to see what all changes immediately with game day operations. Like, I swear, if these coaches all come out in like white, I'm just going to be over the moon.
Well, I know Billy G is an orange. Go ahead, Dev.
We might start getting hearing Gator Bait played again. And one of the cool things that I saw was the homecoming game. Of course, we had the throwback uniforms that look great, by the way. The attention to detail is finally, we saw it after 4 years. They had like throwback flags that the flag boys took onto the field before the game. It was very nostalgic, very cool. I that was a nice touch that I enjoyed.
Yeah, I could keep the interlocking logo over there on the 25 yard line. That's a nice touch.
Shout out to the alumni band. I'm not sure any of you guys were sitting in your seats for halftime, man. I'm on the alumni side and watching like the 80 extra band members all like – it was honestly the cutest thing, because there's like these ladies in their 70s and 80s that are like waving to their grandkids and then playing their tuba. I thought that was adorable, so shout out to them.
Yeah, and obviously you guys, Hunter, Dev, Lovelace – They all made an appearance to law school with our guys Silk and his kid and Dan Thompson. They all swung by, but somebody on this podcast was too good to make an appearance at his old stomping ground. Do you think, as much as Will touts that he's a lawyer, he'd visit the law school to see us on game day? So appreciate you guys for coming. I almost canceled the tailgate as I texted you guys like on Tuesday or Wednesday. You know, I'm not in the mood. I don't want to give up 5 a.m. from Jacksonville. It's first come, first serve there. I like my spot, so I get there at 7:30 in the morning, make sure I've got access to the outlet so I can play it, you know, plug in the TV, all that good jazz. And then Silk hit us up in the mentions, and we had a funeral tailgate, which came to fruition, thankfully. But now Tennessee and Florida State just got that much better. A tailgating experience that Billy Napier is no longer our football coach. We got some excitement. You know, what are your guys' thoughts? Just the game day, the tailgating experience now that, hey, we can go win a football game and not be worried someone's going to keep his job any longer.
Another no-call, no-show was heartbreaking. Father Will.
Unexpected.
I was at the Salty Dog Saloon actually conducting interviews, doing a little journalistic background on some former UAA employees. Getting to the real story on where Billy Napier's downfall began. And turns out it might have began when he started bringing over everybody, including trying to hire pilots from the University of Louisiana Lafayette. He was apparently shocked to learn that the University of Florida had their own pilots who have been long established members of the UF employee thing. But that just kind of, you know, goes to show of the sort of the micromanaging aspect of Billy. He had his hand in every single pot, whether it was on the field, off the field, recruiting, everything. And sometimes it was good. A lot of times it was really bad, especially on game days.
I have a
Jackson, Devin, we just witnessed the craziest diversion of question. we started that by talking about Will skipping a tailgate and Jackson asking about tailgating. And we somehow ended with Will going back to Billy's micromanaging. I mean, that was
If we keep let's stay focused.
Pressing Will, we're going to get some more pilot nuggets and things up on Saturday.
When Billy was being asked, not to make it continue making it about Billy, but it's like when he was asked if he was coaching for his job and if he deserved to still be our coach, and he just sort of turned it into a discussion about the game plan. I'm all for it.
Yeah, I have a feeling we're going to get some really good post-mortem stories from this tenure here in the next, you know, weeks and months. Just hearing about some of the great CEO that maybe wasn't as great of a CEO as what we were led to believe for 4 years.
Yeah,
we've seen some tweets already on the timeline that I think they're going to wait a little bit, maybe the season to end before they start the tell-all. But yeah, I'm also excited, Dev.
Usually, Florida, Georgia. Sorry, go ahead, Hunter.
I was going to say, shout out Florida Georgia Tailgate, the Breakfast with the Gator Boys. Like, I'm not even trying to just rub it in on Will, but I know Jackson, Devin, and Jacob Lovelace have all RSVP'd. Yes, I'm not sure if Will will be stopping by. Hopefully he does.
Put me as a solid maybe.
Solid maybe, yeah, that's fair. Yeah, but any listeners that would be interested and they'll be in Jacksonville and want to tailgate, slide in the Breakfast with the Gator DMs and we'll send you the details. So that's going to be a fun one. And Ole Miss, that game just got a lot more fun. Don't get me wrong. Making a trip to the Grove was already going to be a good time, but if we make it to the Grove and the Lane Kiffin talks are still there, they're going to hate to see us.
This shirt just got printed as of Monday morning. I've got multiple shirts coming in with Lane Kiffin and DJ Lagway on them that we will be wearing in Oxford. So if they're going to be in our mentions for several weeks now, Dev, get prepared. You too, Will. Well, I haven't seen any in yours, but going up there now to steal their coach. We're like the Minions, not stealing the moon. We're just going to steal your head football coach, and we're going to win national titles in Gainesville.
After the week that I had on Twitter, just not even reporting news, just kind of screenshotting what their athletic director said out of nowhere before the Florida job even came open. I think I'm addicted to telling other fan bases that we're going to take their coach. It's a lot of fun. When it comes down to it, we are the University of Florida and they are the University of Mississippi. We win national championships. We have Heisman Trophy winners. We win the conference. And their last 15 years, they've experienced the most success as a program they've ever had. Still haven't ever made it to Atlanta. They never will. And if we want their head coach, we're going to take their head coach. So
what was it, like 2 years ago, Dev, when they went to Tulane and Tulane was they had all the signs and bragging that they've got more SEC titles than Ole Miss?
That would be correct. There's an old adage, I think, that goes around the SEC. You are Ole Miss. They need to remember their place. They need to know who they're dealing with. We're the University of Florida. I read Scott Strickland's statement. We're about to start acting like the University of Florida again. And we can clip this and throw this hand grenade into the Twitter sphere to see what SIP Central and Rebel Report has to say when the Florida Gators come calling. Lane Kiffin's going to answer. He'll be the next coach of the Florida Gators.
Yeah, but don't they have way too many lawyers and doctors at their school? You know, they got money floating around.
I did hear that. I checked the U.S. News and World Report rankings. There's no confirmation that Ole Miss actually has a medical school. And it turns out if you go and graduate high school in the state of Mississippi, that automatically enrolls you in their law school.
Hey, now I have a lot of relatives who live in Mississippi. They're great people over there.
I'm sure
they're just going to be a little depressed after we take their football coach.
That is fitting. Two of our last three hires will be taking the saviors of the state of Mississippi, Dan Mullen in Starkville and now Lane Kiffin of Ole Miss.
You would think that Scott Strickland would be excited to cripple his, you know, biggest rival.
That's going to be a real tough blow for an all kinds of weather Neil. If Scott Strickland hires and he cripples, Miss State's rival.
People might be having the conversation if we get this over the finish line and Lane has the kind of success that we all think he's going to have. He's going to be the athletic director that hired a national championship winning basketball coach, potentially a national championship winning football coach. He built a brand new baseball stadium, multi-million dollar renovations to the O-Dome and to the Swamp in the next 5 years. By 2030, we might be asking, is Scott Strickland the greatest athletic director in the history of the University of Florida? That's what that statement's got me feeling like.
It's crazy how things can change with just an email.
A little hope, right? You guys haven't known me in a non-Billy Napier Coach Florida era. I'm starting to wear the logo on my chest with a little bit of pride again.
Man, a month and a half ago, we were predicting 9-3 at worst, 12-0 at best, SEC Coach of the Year predictions, and now we are higher Lane Kiffin. We're 3-4, and Des, what'd you say?
I already have us winning national championships, plural. We're not getting ahead of ourselves. Let's get this over the finish line. Let's get to November and then we can really
start. We're just making like the first lap on the mile. I mean, we're not even, we just got started. I mean, he can troll us next week. I mean, he may sign the extension on Ole Miss Florida week.
Well, I think in classic Billy Napier fashion, we need to go have the best bye week in the history of bye weeks and then get ready for Georgia.
Yeah. Can you imagine? Yeah, let's take it one step at a time. Let's go beat the dogs in Athens. That will kickstart, you know, the latter half of the 2025 season, create some momentum into the off season, and go get ourselves a head football coach.
Fortunately, we don't even have to go to Athens to play, and we can get them in Jacksonville.
Good point. Anything else? Basketball, we're 14 days away. Gare's tipping off. I believe it's a top 10 matchup or a top 15 matchup. We're 3. Arizona is 10-11. Gators.
They could be 1-2. Gators by a billion.
Gators, and they're not.
Gators held a close scrimmage against FIU Saturday, I believe, in Gainesville before they entered the field in the swamp for their celebration. Gators look good, supposedly. Florida Basketball Hour tweeted a few tidbits. Go follow them. They're part of the Stadium Gale Network as well. Neil Blackman and those guys do a fantastic job. Boogie Flan looked like an all-SEC guard that we anticipate. The front court, superstars, as we imagine, right? They're going to be the leaders, the heart and soul of this team. I'm excited. So,
I want to thoughts? I want to say the aggregators account said that we won like 91-62 or something like that.
Yeah, we'll take that.
Yeah, that'll work.
Yep, that plays. So, anything else, guys? I think we might. I don't know if we've got State of the Union this week for breakfast bites. We'll text each other if we want to get something on the show. We might do a Sunday show recap the college football slate. We got some maybe future head coaches that'll be playing in some big game. So we might recap the college football landscape and see what we've heard in the Twitter sphere and all the media reports over the next 6-7 days.
Depending what happens to Mike Norvell in the next, maybe even today, we might need to talk about potentially FSU coming open and how we can just continue to beat them down and show that we're the dominant flagship university in the state of Florida.
Well, I think it's Clay Fink. He's a known Twitter guy. He covers the Seminoles. I don't know what publication or online site he is with, but he tweeted out his 8 candidates, his top 3. Lane Kiffin, not on that spreadsheet. I think he knows. Different hiring pools. Just like, you know, some people brought up, we're in the same pools as Arkansas and Virginia Tech. Yeah, give me a break. Florida State's not in the same coaching pool as us. So this is the number one job out there right now. Auburn might open up. LSU might open up. We are a more serious program. Funny, Dev, I think you read some message board posts today that Florida is a serious athletic program because we are taking this coaching search seriously. We have fired our football coach as Hugh Freeze remains employed at Auburn.
Yeah, I thought that was a funny read. I was curious. I was texting some of my buddies that are Auburn fans and was curious what the temperature over there was because they had a ugly home loss again. I think they're 0-4 in SEC play now. So I was curious if they were on fired coach watch as well. And, we were called a serious athletic program that cares about football. So they sounded like Florida fans circa October 12th. That was a funny read on the Auburn message boards. So that's a job that's coming open. I would guess FSU, I think, is coming open. And I think that some of the games next weekend to monitor are obviously Ole Miss and Oklahoma and Norman. But it's probably a pretty big game that's going to happen in Baton Rouge for LSU and Texas A&M. I think LSU has Alabama looming in Tuscaloosa after that game. So this thing could kind of slide off the rails for Brian Kelly if he's not careful.
Yeah, a lot of coaching carousel news coming out. It's quick. We're midway through October, and a lot has changed for us in our first 7 weeks of podcasting. But we're about to have a lot of fun, hopefully, over these next few weeks with Callaway dialing up the plays, Billy G taking over, and let's see if the Gators can run the table. So – thank you guys again for listening. Please like, subscribe, follow us on Twitter and YouTube and Spotify. Breakfast with the Gators on YouTube and Spotify, and at Breakfast WTG on Twitter. Again, we are brought to you by our partner, Norris & Norris PA, out of Lake City of Florida. They're a preeminent law firm serving North Florida since 1985, and you can give Guy a call if you need any assistance with business law matters, real estate, wills, or trust and estate planning. You can give him a call at 386-752-7240. And we'll see you guys again for another episode of Breakfast with the Gators.
Go Gators.
Go Gators.